Welcome to part two of a three-part series on the destruction of the trade towers, a lecture by David Ray Griffin on October 15, 2005 in New York City. Dr. Griffin is the author of two books on the subject of 9/11, both penned in 2004, The New Pearl Harbor, Disturbing Questions About the Bush Administration and 9/11, and The 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions. Here are excerpts from Part 1 with David Ray Griffin.
In my first book on 9/11, The New Pearl Harbor, I summarized dozens of facts and reports that contradicted the official story about 9/11. Then in my second book, The 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions, I showed how the 9/11 Commission dealt with all those facts and reports, that is, by distorting a few of them and simply omitting the rest of them. So I've been giving a cumulative argument, a big picture approach, and there's a real advantage to this big picture approach because it shows that no matter where you begin with the official story, it's problematic. And that's very important to realize. I'm going to focus on one question and one question only. Why did the Twin Towers and Building 7 of the World Trade Center collapse? One advantage of this focus, besides the fact that it will allow us to go into this issue in some detail, is that the destruction of the World Trade Center, I have become convinced, provides one of the best, perhaps the best, window into the truth about 9/11.
We now include the 10 characteristics by David Ray Griffin about the World Trade Center and its relation to controlled demolition.
That the collapses had at least 10 characteristics that come with controlled demolition. I will now briefly indicate those 10 characteristics. First, in controlled demolition, the onset of the collapse is sudden. One moment the building is perfectly motionless, the next moment it suddenly begins to collapse. But steel, when heated, does not suddenly buckle or break. So in fire-induced collapses, if we had ever had any examples of such, the onset would be gradual. Horizontal beams and trusses would begin to sag. Vertical columns, if subjected to strong forces, would begin to bend. But as videos of the towers show, there were no signs of bending or sagging, even on the floors just above the damage caused by the impact of the airplanes. The buildings were perfectly motionless up till the moment they began to collapse. Second, the most important thing in a controlled demolition of a tall building that is near other buildings is that it comes straight down into or at least close to the building's own footprint so that it does not destroy the surrounding buildings. The whole art or science of controlled demolition is oriented primarily around this goal. As Mark Loiseau, the president of Controlled Demolition Incorporated, has explained, to bring a building down as we want, so no other structure is harmed, the demolition must be completely planned, using the right explosives and the right pattern of laying the charges. If the 110-story Twin Towers had fallen over, they would have caused an enormous amount of damage in Lower Manhattan. But the towers came straight down. The official theory, therefore, requires a miracle. With fire-producing collapses that perfectly mimicked the kind of collapses that have otherwise been produced only by precisely placed explosives. Third, buildings brought down by controlled demolition collapse at almost free fall speed. This can occur because the supports for the lower floors are destroyed, so that when the upper floors come down, they encounter no resistance. The fact that the collapses of the towers mimic this feature of controlled demolition was indirectly mentioned by the 9/11 Commission, which said that the South Tower collapsed in 10 seconds. Now, actually, that's some exaggeration. It was closer to 14 seconds. But in any case, the authors of the report thought, evidently, that this very rapid collapse did not conflict with the official theory, which is a pancake theory, according to which the floors above the hole created by the impact of the airplane collapsed on the floor below it, bringing their weight and down, and then they pancaked all the way down. But if that's what happened, the lower floors, with all their steel and concrete, would have provided some resistance. The upper floors could not have fallen through them at the same speed as they would fall through the air. And yet the videos of the collapses show that the rubble falling inside the building's profile falls at the same speed as the rubble falling outside the building's profile. Fourth, the official theory is even more decisively ruled out by the fact that the collapses were total. These 110-story buildings collapsed into piles of rubble no more than a few stories high. According to the pancake theory, the horizontal steel supports broke free from the vertical columns, and that allowed the floors to pancake down. But if that is what happened, it would have been like the old 78 phonographs in which the records fell, but the spindle still sticking up in the air. The 9/11 Commission came up with a bold solution to this problem. The problem, of course, is that the core of each building had not just a spindle, but 47 of them, 47 massive steel columns. The bold solution of the 9/11 Commission was simply to deny the existence of those columns. It said, the interior core of the building was a hollow steel shaft in which elevators and stairwells were grouped. Voila! No core columns, most serious problem with total collapse solved. NIST's report handled this most difficult problem by claiming that when the floors collapsed, they pulled on the core columns and the perimeter columns, causing the perimeter columns to become unstable. This instability then increased the gravity load on the core columns, which had been weakened by tremendously hot fires in the core, which NIST claims reached 1,832 degrees Fahrenheit, and this combination of factors somehow produced global collapse, their word for total collapse. Well, of course, one problem with this is that there is no evidence whatsoever for those tremendously hot fires of 1,832 degrees. As I said earlier, NIST found evidence only of temperatures of 500 degrees, so they added more than 1,300 degrees with pure speculation. But even worse than that, even if they could have made a case for that, that would have provided no explanation whatsoever for this theory of total collapse. The NIST report asserts that column failure occurred in the core as well as the perimeter columns. But this remains a bare assertion. There is no plausible explanation with anything close to scientific rigor about how such column failure could have occurred. Five, in controlled demolitions of steel frame buildings, explosives are used to slice the steel columns and beams into pieces. A representative from Controlled Demolition, Inc., has said of RDX, one of the commonly used high explosives, that it slices steel like a razor blade through a tomato. The steel, moreover, is not merely sliced. It is sliced into manageable lengths. As Controlled Demolition, Inc. says in its publicity, our system segments steel components into pieces matching the lifting capacity of the available equipment. The collapses of the Twin Towers magically mimicked this feature of controlled demolitions also. Jim Hoffman, after studying various photos of the collapsed site, said that much of the steel seemed to be chopped up into sections that could be easily loaded onto the equipment that was cleaning up Ground Zero. Six, another feature of controlled demolition is the production of a lot of dust. Because explosives powerful enough to slice steel will pulverize concrete and any other non-metallic substances into very fine dust. And Hoffman reports nearly all of the non-metallic constituents of the towers were pulverized into fine powder. That observation was also made by Colonel John O'Dowd of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. At the World Trade Center sites, he told the History Channel, it seemed like everything was pulverized. This fact creates a problem for the official theory, according to which the only energy available was the gravitational energy. This energy seems wholly unsuited to explain the pulverization, especially in the first few seconds. In Hoffman's words, you can see thick clouds of pulverized concrete being ejected within the first 2 seconds. That's when the relative motion of the top of the tower to the intact portion was only a few feet per second. And yet we're to believe that those very slowly moving pieces of concrete somehow pulverized themselves by hitting each other into very fine dust particles. Seven, another common feature of controlled demolitions are dust clouds, which result when explosions eject the dust from the building with tremendous energy. And as one can see by comparing the videos of the Twin Towers collapses with controlled demolitions on the web, such as the Seattle Kingdom, it's very similar. The only difference is that the dust clouds from the Twin Towers are much bigger, suggesting that even a much greater explosive energy was employed. The question of the source of the needed energy again arises. Hoffman, focusing on the expansion of the North Tower's dust cloud, calculates that the energy required simply for this expansion, leaving aside the energy needed to pulverize the concrete and slice the steel, would be about at least 10 times as great as the energy available from gravity. So the official account involves a huge violation of the laws of physics, a violation that becomes even more profound when we bring in the amount of energy needed to slice the steel and pulverize the concrete and the other materials. Number eight, another common feature of controlled demolition is the horizontal ejection of other materials besides the dust from those areas of the building in which the explosives are set off. In the case of the Twin Towers, photos and videos reveal that heavy pieces of steel were ejected in all directions for distances up to 500 feet, while aluminum cladding was blown up to 700 feet away from the towers. But gravitational energy is vertical. It cannot begin to explain these tremendous horizontal ejections. Nine, still another common feature of collapses induced by explosions are demolition rings, in which a series of small explosions run rapidly around the building. This feature was also manifested by the Twin Towers. A tenth feature of collapses induced by explosives is, logically enough, the occurrence of sights and sounds produced by the explosions. Besides hearing the explosions, witnesses may see flashes and/or demolition rings.
This is part two of a three-part series, The Destruction of the Trade Towers by David Ray Griffin. During that event, a video was played, including a PBS documentary from September 2002, which has Larry Silverstein, who had leased the World Trade Center complex, mention the term pulled when describing the collapse of Building Number 7.
I remember getting a call from the fire department commander. telling me that they were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire. I said, you know, we've had such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull, and then we watched the building collapse.
The building was designed to have a fully loaded 707 crash into it. That was the largest plane at the time. I believe that the building probably could sustain multiple impacts of jetliners because this structure is like the mosquito netting on your screen door, this intense grid, and the jet plane is just a pencil puncturing that screen netting. It really does nothing to the screen netting.
As if someone had deliberately set blasts to take place to cause the building to fall vertically downward.
A light-colored dust detonation zone quickly progresses down the side of the tower while the corner structure remains intact. Within 3 seconds, the detonation zone has become roughly 30 stories tall, with the dark smoke collapse zone far above.
We made it at least two blocks, and we started running. Floor by floor, it started popping out.
It was like, it was if they had detonated.
Detonated.
If they were planned to take down a building. Boom, 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 boom.
All the way down. I was watching it and running.
Eileen LaPalmer, 1010 Winds, live outside of City Hall.
Okay, now we have word from Washington that the Capitol and the Treasury are being evacuated. This in addition to the White House and to the Pentagon. The Pentagon apparently having been hit by a plane this morning, not unlike the World Trade Center Twin Towers, both of which appear to have been on the news of what had transpired here in New York City this morning. If you are a New York City firefighter, you are requested to report, ordered to report to your station immediately. We need the help this morning with a major disaster unfolding in New York City, and the world has changed markedly in little less than an hour. When we first got word that a plane had crashed into the World Trade Center, we then saw a second plane crash into the second tower of the World Trade Center. We later got word of a plane apparently crashing into the Pentagon, word that the White House had been evacuated, now the Capitol and the Treasury also having been evacuated. What we have not heard yet are casualty figures for what is obviously a massive disaster at the World Trade Center, and there is no doubt massive loss of life there.
Let's take a closer look at the dust cloud rising up from the base of the North Tower before it started to fall. It appears to be associated with the massive explosion that occurred 17 seconds before the tower starts to fall.
There were people at their gas pumps who turned to look at the smoke that was coming from the city. Folks stepping out of bodegas and stores to look. Now people are gathering in large groups. In fact, in one corner, I saw a group of people actually holding hands and praying. As I stand on the end of an act bridge, which is closed, it is open to pedestrian traffic. Some people are walking around, but there's just no way to go to. I don't want to get out of something else that I can't.
The dust clouds following the ejected debris are consistent with an explosive event, whereas large chunks of concrete would normally result from a simple collapse. This would indicate that a powerful explosion, similar to a cannon firing a cannonball, must have ejected this heavy steel debris with equal upward and outward force to create this shape of projectile motion.
Fire department commander telling me that they were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire. Listen, you know, we've had such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull, and then we watched the building collapse.
Around the area, New Jersey Transit outbound overhead terminal operating on a load-and-go basis, no inbound service, and also at a Newark Penn Station, limited service on the Northeast Corridor and North Jersey coastlines and the Raritan line as well, and limited service from Penn Station at New York and to Penn Station in Newark, and no service into the city on New Jersey Transit. Also, New Jersey Transit operating on a load.
Now let's use forward and reverse to analyze the shock wave that ripped through the building.
You know, we heard this sound that sounded like a clap of thunder. Turned around, we were shocked to see that the building was, it looked like there was a shock wave ripping through the building and the windows all busted out, and, you know, it was horrifying. And then, about a second later, the bottom floor caved out. And the building followed after that, and we saw the building crash down all the way to the ground. We were in shock.
Difficulties around the area. New Jersey Transit outbound overhead terminal operating on a load-and-go basis. No inbound service. And also at the Newark Penn Station, limited service on the Northeast Corridor and North Jersey coastlines and the Raritan line as well. And limited service from Penn Station and New York and to Penn Station and Newark. And no service into the city on New Jersey Transit. Also, New Jersey Transit operating on a load-and-go basis out of New York Penn Station.
Well, I didn't realize because the other towers are so big, but number 7 is 47 stories.
Explosive energy creates hot dust clouds rising like a volcanic eruption.
By the other two, it was kind of a reddish brown, and it more or less ran east and west. It was a long, thin building, but it had been damaged and it had been on fire for hours, and the smoke just seemed to intensify. But we really couldn't see a lot of damage from this angle, from the north side of the structures. That's why everybody was so surprised when all of a sudden it just fell.
We observed that World Trade Center 7 fell faster than the speed of gravity, equivalent to the speed of free fall in a vacuum. We must conclude that a vacuum was created characteristic of an implosion where the structure is pulled down by a controlled demolition. Our supporting evidence is that debris fell neatly within the footprint of the building. An eyewitness heard a loud clap of thunder and saw a shockwave rip through the building, blowing out windows, before the ground floor exploded, and a second later, the building came down. The U.S. Geological Survey website provides us with a definition of a pyroclastic flow as a ground-hugging avalanche of hot gas and debris.
Buildings that have been here so long would actually just fall, and that's what happened. They just crumbled.
The rising gas chimney is clearly visible in this photo of the North Tower implosion with pyroclastic flows between buildings. The cauliflower shape of the debris clouds is a telltale sign of pyroclastic flows generated by massive explosions typical of volcanic eruptions and controlled demolitions.
Yes, you're absolutely right, Ben. That is the second building that has gone down. It came out like a plume of smoke, like a banana unpeeling.
Some testimony suggestive of explosions in the tower provided by reporters, firefighters, medical workers, police workers, and people who worked in the buildings has long been available. A few of these testimonies, such as those of janitor William Rodriguez, engineer Mike Pecoraro, firefighter Louis Caccioli, and employee Teresa Veliz, are very impressive. But we didn't have many such testimonies. But this situation has now dramatically changed. Shortly after 9/11, the New York Fire Department recorded over 500 oral histories in which firefighters and emergency medical workers recounted their experiences of that day. Mayor Bloomberg's administration refused to release these oral histories, but the New York Times, joined by several families of the 9/11 victims, file suit. And after a very long process, the city was ordered by the New York Court of Appeals to release these oral histories, which they did this past August. The Times then made these oral histories available, so you can go on the web and read them for yourself. These oral histories contain many dozens of testimonies that speak of explosions and related phenomena characteristic of controlled demolition.
That was David Ray Griffin in a New York City lecture titled The Destruction of the Trade Towers. The event sponsors are WBAI 99.5 FM, New York City, MUJCA, Muslim Christian Jewish Alliance, and New York 9/11 Truth. For CD copies of this lecture, contact the sponsor. Email address info@ny911truth.org. Phone number 212 area code 714-7147. An item related to this topic occurred last Saturday, January 28th. A daily newspaper, the Deseret Morning News out of Salt Lake City, Utah, printed an article by Elaine Jarvik on a group called Scholars for 9/11 Truth that are stating that the current administration has been dishonest about what happened on September 11th and that the World Trade Center was almost certainly brought down by controlled demolitions. Scholars for 9/11 Truth was co-founded by Jim Fetzer, professor of philosophy at the University of Minnesota, and Stephen Jones, professor of physics at Brigham Young University, whose other members include Victoria Ashley of 911research.wtc7.net, Andres von Bülow, former assistant German defense minister and member of parliament, Morgan Reynolds, former chief economist for the Department of Labor under George W. Bush, 43, and noted writers Webster Tarpley and Wayne Madsen. Their website is at scholarsfor911truth.org. Part 3, the last segment of this program, airs next week, Thursday, February 9th at 10 a.m. This is Mal Resler, your host for this segment of the Thursday Radio Zine.
Saturday, February the 11th, the PCC African Film Festival will host a special symposium and community conversation on the African legacy in Mexico. The program will offer the community an opportunity to learn more about the history and cultural influences of the Africans in Mexico. At 10 a.m., the program will start off with a trilogy presented by Mexican film director Rafael Robayar Corona. The trilogy will include his films The Forgotten Root, From Florida to Coahuila, and his work in progress, Incursion into the Hills. In the afternoon, the director and other experts in the fields will speak on the Afro-Mexican identity, followed by a community conversation with local activists and audience members. Both events will be held in the new Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, Auditorium Room 104, at the Cascade Campus on 705 North Killingsworth Street. This KBOO co-sponsored event will be free to the public. For more information, go to www.africanfilmfestival.org or call 503-244-6111, extension 3630.